Hey, how are you? My name's Mark Farrell. The show's Insight. Welcome to Thursday. How's it feel? Feels pretty damn good, right? It's March. Yes. Got the two most depressing months of winter behind us. Thank God. 888-874-4888 for all your calls, questions, comments. Anyone who wants to get me off the air, feel free to call that number and just ask for Jason Taubenfeld, the program director, and he'll try to do his best to get me from speaking behind a microphone. Hey, we got a great show in front of you today. There's a disability film festival that started years ago. It's actually the 8th anniversary, the Real Abilities Film Festival, bringing together the community to promote awareness and appreciation of the lives, stories, and artistic expressions of people with different abilities. Real Abilities Film Festival showcases films, conversations, and artistic programs to explore, embrace, and celebrate the diversity of our shared human experience. We're going to meet the director of Real Abilities, spelled R-E-E-L, Abilities, Isaac Zablocki, in a few minutes. Lots of great content for you. We're going to jump right into that. But from the direct from the How Cool Is This file, imagine hearing this in your high school gym. Eddie Vedder, baby. He returned to his old high school, performing with teachers and alumni as part of the school's annual performing arts benefit show. Can you imagine that? Yeah, Mom, Dad, I'm going back to school today because we have a benefit show starring the lead man of Pearl Jam. That happened in San Diego Academy in Encinitas. I always screw this name up. Encinitas, California. It's organized by, I believe, one of his former classmates. Yes, Eddie said, hey, can you perform? He said, yeah, sure, I will, but under one condition. That has to be totally kept silent, because obviously he didn't want him to be all about the Eddie Vedder show. He wanted to focus on the kids, which is very, very cool. That's all it's about. And on school and its theater arts program. And he sang a bunch of covers, Time, but Joe Jackson also performed Pearl Jam's Long Road, which he actually written, this is very cool, written about his former drama instructor who passed away back in 95 and subsequently had the high school's theater named after him. So really cool not only to come back to your home turf and do the right thing to help raise money and obviously inspire kids who are there, music program or not, to really just embrace, you know, remembering where you're from. I mean, that's a huge thing. A lot of us, especially, you know, being this broadcast on the Progressive Radio Network, being a worldwide reaching platform, that, you know, we move a lot. We travel a lot internationally, especially for our international listeners. I mean, to move from one country to another is an easy feat versus, you know, when you live in the States, you know, it's a little bit more and more unlikely for U.S. residents to do that. So it's really cool to remember where you're from, to pay homage to it, and certainly if you make it really in big time nature to come back and, you know, do the right thing. So it's kind of cool also because Pearl Jam's going to be hitting the road in April for a month-long stretch of their North American dates. So I just can't – I mean, I'm a big Pearl Jam fan, and I just can't believe, you know, walking into the auditorium and seeing Eddie Vedder up on stage, you know, with your science teacher or your liberal arts teacher or your gym teacher with his shorts pulled up way too high. But maybe he can carry a note. That's really, really cool stuff, man. So a segue into the same vein, but entirely different vein, with the school mantra in mind that, you know, as you know, I speak to schools and colleges and corporations nationally, and one of the topics I speak about is bullying. And this drives me crazy because most of the times, majority of the times I speak about it, it's to students, certainly. And one of the messages, my mantra is about bullying is bullies don't have the real power. You do. Now, that's typical, but not in this scenario, because this really gets under my skin, because a New Jersey high school baseball coach accused by former players and parents of creating a culture of bullying will get to keep his job for now. This happens in South Orange Maplewood School Board. A parent of Randy Nathan told the board at the meeting, which took place about a week ago, what if your child was in a hostile environment? You have a chance to do something about it. Nathan said his son was kicked off the Columbia High School baseball team his senior year after raising bullying concerns about the behavior of his shoddy. That is the coach Actually, there's a video shown speaking aggressively to his team last year, saying some pretty egregious things. Another former player, David DeFranco, filed a lawsuit earlier this month complaining that he was cut from the baseball team his senior season because he complained about bullying the previous year. He was also only allowed back after he suggested to officials that that was the reason he was let go from the team. So he had to kind of turn it back around. So there's a lawsuit that claims that Fischetti and other coaches made sexist, racist, and demeaning comments to the baseball team players. So school and district officials don't step in, despite his and other players' complaints, the lawsuit adds. So at a recent meeting, the coach Fischetti overwhelmingly had supporters in his corner because it's a winning – they won a championship last year. P.S. Underscore that. Major point. So the school board said it has been looking into the allegations, blah, blah, blah. Parents and students for more than a year revised the district's conduct and athletic codes after the investigation, the new guidelines, blah, 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 approved by the meeting. So the board basically voted 6-3 to keep Coach Fischetti employed as a coach while investigation into the bullying accusations continue. Now, there's a few points I'd like to make. Number one, what example is being set for students that bully? So, possibly, look at this. A coach is doing this. A faculty member in our own school. And he's allowed to keep his job. So, you know what? If I'm going to torment a person or two or three, what's going to happen to me? Right? What kind of example are we setting? What about for students who report being bullied? Or actually even the bystander, because there are laws obviously against bullying, and there's also bystander laws where if you see something, you have to do something, otherwise you can get into trouble as well. So what other precedent doesn't set for the kids in this school who would typically, or you would hope, would report being bullied or witnessing a situation where someone is being bullied? And I just don't understand where this is going. So Parent Nathan told NBC the other day, last week, that in the administration investigated Fischetti had found six instances when his son Alex was bullied or harassed. It's not clear what, if any, consequences Fischetti faced after the probe, as officials called a private personal matter. It shouldn't be private. He's coaching a team of teenagers, but a winning team. That's what I think it comes down to. So basically the father says they don't care about respect. They don't care about character. Nathan said last week that they care about is winning, and that's because they think they know how to win, yada, yada, yada. The allegations of bullying came to head at a similar school board meeting last year. But back then they had defenders who were allowed to keep his job. So the reality is, though, I mean, this is just setting a bad, bad tone and example on many levels. So is winning more important than like having an ethical and humane treatment of students? The coach should be sidelined. He should totally be sidelined until all the evidence is weighed. And then if everything is weighed, has gone through, investigated, et cetera, and then he's found innocent, so be it. You may not agree with it. I may not agree with it. But the reality is if your son or possibly even daughter, not sure if there are any girls on the team, are playing at a high school level, any level, and there's accusations that the coach or coaches are bullying their teammates or their members on the team, then, serious action's got to be taken. I mean, you can't take this lightly. I mean, kids can be scarred for life, and you never know what will develop because of this. I mean, they can develop major, major complexes. They could, maybe start using drugs to deal with it. They could get depressed. There's the domino effect that could fall out from this. So this is a serious issue that I just don't understand how a board can allow somebody in this particular situation, this position. If he was in a classroom, would it be any different? 888-874-4888. If he was in a classroom instructing kids, what's really the difference between a classroom and a field, playing field? Well, there is reputation, because I guess there are different standards for measuring a teacher's ability to teach, because obviously there are standardized tests. Now, when you're on the field as a coach, there is a very, very obvious yardstick, barometer to judge success. It's called winning streak. And so when you have a championship season under your belt, and then these accusations, which were brewing prior to that, you know, reach the boiling point. But the board is like, hey, listen, we got a winning season here. And the 2016 season's looking damn good, too. Do we really want to remove Fischetti as coach? I don't know about that. So I just think we really, really need to reevaluate this or have another set of standards or practices in place here, because it's really setting a bad, bad precedent for kids to realize that either bullying is okay. Look, the coach, head coach of the baseball team is allowed to do it. That is absurd. I remember being in high school and being visually impaired. I wasn't on teams for long because I tried to make teams, and I actually would make them, but I'd quit for several reasons. Number one, in soccer, it was way too hard for me to track the soccer balls. And number two, in basketball, it was way too hard to track the basketballs as well in practice. And I never came forth and clean and wasn't candid with the coaches to say, listen, I'm visually impaired and I can't track the balls, so I made up other excuses why I quit. That was one reason why I quit. The other reason why I quit, because we had to take a lot of times, still to this day, unless there is girls involved, you play shirts and skins. I didn't like to take my shirt off because I was a little chubby back then. I had really bad acne. Big time. So I was really, really not too confident, you know, doing any of the sports. But so one of the soccer coaches was really harsh. Really harsh. And I just remember going like, saying to myself, like, this is such a bunch of BS. Do you really need to be that degrading to people? You know, all right, here I am 15. Was I astute back then? I certainly know right from wrong. And I would be like, you know, I'm a hard worker. I'm busting my chops. And I just remember the way they would scream at us. And this is nothing new. This has been going on since the dawn of sports. And I guess some people need to be treated like that to get them motivated. But I just remember being reprimanded, like, you know, for nothing. And I'd be like, this is why I don't like sports in a level of this nature. I'm fine. As a matter of fact, you know, it revealed later on in life when I became a triathlete, I should say, a marathoner and cyclist, that I'm a individual sport enthusiast. I just thrive working by myself because that's kind of how my life kind of took shape and form because of the fact that I wasn't able to participate in a lot of group activities, whether it be academically or in the field or on the court. So I just remember, you know, hearing all these different instances, and I never played football, but it was even worse on a gridiron. Jeez, man, these kids used to be a problem. Coaches used to push them, throw them down on the ground, you know, and I'm sure that stuff still happens. Very, very cool. If, you know, I guess it's cool for the coaches because they think, oh, they can flex their muscles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I want to bring on the heels of that story. So if you want to read more, again, the school name is Columbia High School in Maplewood, New Jersey. Columbia High School in Maplewood, New Jersey. I urge you to read more about it because do some social media posting about it, because I just think it's kind of absurd that somebody of that nature, a caliber of that position with kids, directing kids, can keep their job. So another thing from the How Cool Is This file, Brawn and Brain, speaking of football and sports, et cetera, Ivy League football coaches voted recently to take tackling during regular season practices out. Very cool, huh? The goal, reduce concussions and injuries. So I call this Brawn and Brains, right? Because these Ivy League schools obviously are quite intelligent. And it's very, very smart to take the tackling out of practices. Of course, the NFL and other football programs have been on a fire for, you know, the rise in number of players getting concussions that lead to long-term damage. I mean, there's some great documentaries done on this. And Will Smith's new movie called Concussion, which Jada is still pissed about, which we'll probably segue into in a few minutes because we're talking about the Real Abilities Film Festival. And obviously that's on the heels of the Oscars, which took place, controversial Oscars, this past Sunday. So it's kind of cool, though, because this may put pressure on other football leagues to update their policies. Because this is going to be great, because this is going to be sort of the template. Everyone's going to be watching the Ivy Leagues to see if their performance is going to be hindered, I should say, because if they're not tackling during practice, does it really, is it going to make you a less effective player, athlete on the field? I mean, there is a real art to tackling. And you can go to execute a particular tackle when you see somebody moving, but that all changes in milliseconds because a shift in the opponent's move, the turf, your footing, and there's so many different variables about it. But I imagine that the NFL and a lot of other leagues, even internationally, will be watching to find out how this is going to play out. Are players going to be healthier because they're not going to be injured? And I find that it's going to really have a real reflective and long-standing result on how this will be seen. Because I think it's a great step in the right direction. It's, there's a lot of flag football programs coming onto the scene. As a matter of fact, the NFL, if you watch any NFL games, you can see that they're actually promoting it during their games, Super Bowl actually even. So speaking of policies in professional sports, this is kind of a sidebar here, but Yankees pitcher Aroldis Chapman will be the first baseball player punished under the MLB's new domestic violence policy. We've been talking about the NFL and the players, the arrest records, how violent they are, etc. And some of this goes back to because they do get so physically beat up and injured, and all the concussions and the bubbles that they've lived in for all their existence. So yesterday, Chapman was suspended for 30 games for a domestic dispute that he was involved in last year. So I believe he's not going to appeal because it's apparently like one strike, you're out type of thing. But going back to the brawn and brains thing, this is just incredible. I really, really find this a great, great decision by Ivy League football coaches to ban tackling during regular season practices. So it will be very, very interesting to find out, number one, does their performance change? Does it increase? Does it decrease? Does it stay flat? Do their injuries decrease? Increase? I doubt it'll increase or stay flat. So, you know, the goal, obviously, figure a regular season, and I don't watch college football, but I would imagine, Jason, if you're listening to this, our program director, how many games are there in a college season, football season? Do you know, Jason? Jesse, anybody know? How many games are there in a college?
10 and 11 with the conference final.
So okay, so great. All right, so we got 11 games without tackling for practices. You got to figure practices got to be at least 4 or 5 days a week, correct? So if you're not tackling, getting pummeled, either you are the tackler or the tacklee. Is that not right? Then, that's the reality. I mean, I think you can really, really save a lot on your body. I mean, you know, your brain. I mean, you know, your coconut. You got to take care of your coconut, man. I mean, I just, you know, I think it's a great move. I really, really am looking forward to find out the evidence of that. So if you want to find out more about that, just, you know, Google Ivy League football coaches, certainly. And it's very, very cool. So now this is kind of different. We've all been hearing about Cuba. And you know what? It doesn't seem about that long ago that we had some missiles pointed at that island, and the island of Cuba had missiles pointed at us. Bay of Pigs, all that sound familiar? It doesn't sound that long ago, right? It doesn't feel that long ago. But it's really, really cool. I'm embracing this because, hey, I'm all about, you know me. I don't have a lot of enemies in this world. You know, I'm not hard to get along with. And I understand, obviously, international politics, et cetera. And a sidebar real quickly, I'm really, really afraid if Donald Trump gets into office because can you imagine? This is how he talks to fellow candidates. How is he going to talk to other world leaders? He's going to bully them? We are already told by England that Donald Trump will not be allowed into their country. What kind of statement is that? I mean, I understand why they're saying it, but here we are. That's an ally, a very tame and modest ally of ours. What is he going to do and speak? How is he going to treat people who are uncivilized leaders? Okay, I had to say that. Where the hell was I? So anyway, Cuba. Yeah, so it doesn't seem that long ago that where we had missiles pointed at each other, we're going to like blow each other into oblivion, but that's long gone. So guess who's going to the island of Cuba? Yes! Mick and the boys. Raul said, come on over, Mick. Come on over here with yourself. We'll give you some plantains. We'll give you some beer that we make, some cigars, and we'll give you some brown sugar. Because you know Cuba has lots of brown sugar. So it's dubbed the Concert for Amity. Did I say that? Amity. Yeah, whatever. The band will play at the Ciudad Deportiva de la Habana on March 25th. So we're not allowed actually to fly there directly just yet. Major carriers are working all that out. But U.S. citizens will be able to fly there, I believe, in the next 4 months. But if you want to go there, I believe you have to fly through another country, so Mexico, and then you can go there. So it's the largest act to play Cuba since the revolution in 1959. Think about that. And think about the Stones, man. I mean, what kind of how many platforms of radicalism they've been a part of. It's really, really cool. So the band says, we have performed in many special places during our long career, but this show in Havana is going to be a landmark event for us, and we hope for all our friends in Cuba, too. The band said the concert will be a part of the band's American Latina Olé tour. They also are leading a musician-to-musician initiative through which musician-needed musical instruments. It's very, very cool. Equipment are being donated by major suppliers to benefit the Cuban musicians, which is really, really cool. So I don't know if that was Mick's idea, the record label's idea, came from the White House, but it's really cool. So now this was announced, I believe, after Barack announced that he was going to go over there. I mean, the last American president to step foot on Cuban soil, 11 presidents ago, I would say, 11, 12 presidents ago, at least, because what, 1959? Yeah, revolution. Yeah, easily. So, you know, again, Obama's headed over there, and you know he's going to time his visit with Mick and the boys. So I really think this is outstanding. I love the fact that, you know, a lot of people love Obama. A lot of people hate Obama. When you open doors like this for social change for the globe in general, for commerce, for humanitarian reasons, et cetera. The list goes on. I think it's a win-win for everybody. Obviously, it's a very state dictatorship state that we do not agree with, certainly. But I think once tourism opens up and things money starts flowing in, I think that's going to change. Certainly, since Raul's in power, someone just said that's like the weak Baldwin in power, which is pretty funny. So we're going to meet somebody, the director from the Possibilities, Real Abilities Film Festival, coming up right after this. Isaac Zablocki. My name is Mark Fowler. The show is Insight, and it's Progressive Radio Network.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
The story behind the story, your story, my story, it's all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on PRN.FM. This is Utrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell this story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Gary Harrison with you, inviting you to join me on The Smart Show every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're not able to catch me live, you can go to the archives at prn.fm or harrison.fm. Don't forget, it's impeccable behavior to rate the show on iTunes. We come to you each Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, live from Hollywood, where we bring on the movers and shakers, whistleblowers and muckrakers. There's nothing like it anywhere else, and it's here on PRN.FM. If you like a smart show, then join me, Kerry Harrison. It's Harrison on the Progressive Radio Network. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Keep listening to PRN. The Progressive Radio Network.
You know, my intro music I thought was pretty cool, but, you know, after we're hearing Pearl Jam this morning and the Stones, it's just kind of a letdown for me. thank you for your texts and tweets this morning. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888 for your calls, comments. You can have any questions for Isaac Zablocki, Director of Real Abilities, who we're going to meet momentarily. Of course, you can email me at mark@markfarrowmotivation.com, mark@markfarrowmotivation.com. So I love movies. I've always been a movie fanatic, I guess, since a young age. And I guess how many kids aren't? I guess probably more and more are, because kids don't play outside, you know, with balls and bats and, you know, fresh air. I mean, why would you do something so normal? Anyway, I'd like to introduce right now Isaac Zablocki. He is the director of Real Abilities, New York Disabilities Film Festival. And that's spelled, I'm not going to spell Isaac or Zablocki, Real, R-E-E-L, Abilities Film Festival. Welcome to the show, Isaac.
Thank you for having me.
I don't think you were here last year. Was it 2 years ago?
It must have been 2 years ago.
So the sixth annual film festival.
Right.
And you've grown immensely even since then.
We're now in 17 cities across the country.
Woo!
And actually, I have to say now North America, because we're into Canada as well, Toronto. And we're actually going to be also probably looking into Mexico. So all of North America, this is expanding like wildfire.
Wow. So our international listeners can be seeing some Real Abilities Film Festival, hopefully coming to their neighborhood soon.
Right. So here in New York, we're in over 40 locations
wow.
this year. So it's
talk about accessibility.
Exactly.
And also New Jersey, correct?
This year, New Jersey will have its own festival later on in the year.
Yeah, you don't like New Jersey, do you?
I love New Jersey.
I'm just kidding. I'm from New Jersey. So New York City, it's happening March 10th or the 16th, so that's a week from today. And let's talk about it very quickly. This is happening. Obviously, there's a lot of controversy about this, and you're probably like, oh, my God, why are you pulling me into this, Mark? But this is what happened the other day on Sunday night at the Oscars, and it's a good way to kick it off.
Well, I'm here at the Academy Awards, otherwise known as the White People's Choice Awards. You realize if they nominated host, I wouldn't even get this job. So y'all be watching Neil Patrick Harris right now.
and I play that because, number one, he did an incredible job, right? Don't you think? Did you watch it?
I think so. He wasn't afraid to get political.
And it was all about diversity. That was the controversy, was diversity. And I play that clip because Real Abilities Film Festival is all about diversity.
Absolutely. And it actually shocked me that whole night they were talking about diversity, and even some of the award winners mentioned other minorities, and yet America's largest minority was not mentioned for a moment at the ceremony.
It's only 55 million large, so why would you mention that?
And probably the most underexposed as far as film goes, and probably in all other areas too. But this is a community that is huge, that is a major market. But somehow gets ignored. I mean, it's in mainstream cinema, it is almost impossible to find a normal presentation mm. of a person with a disability.
Sure, sure. Now, this started in 2007. Was this with yourself and your colleague?
Myself and my colleague, Anita Altman. I came from the film perspective. She came from the disability mm-hmm. world. She built the partnerships that made this festival really connected here with
great
the
coupling.
City. And I found that I was getting more supply and more demand for these films. That there was no question that a festival like this had to happen.
So, as a child, I imagine we talked about this a moment ago, you must have been addicted to movies at a very young age, because obviously you have an extensive background in film and theater and – I'm sorry, not theater, movies.
I'm a film fanatic, yeah. And that's how I see the world. And personally, that's how I was educated. I see the world through the vision of movies and the movies that I saw. And the fact that a lot of these movies did not include people with disabilities makes people like me possibly see the world – to not include people with disabilities. And if I see the world as film, then when I look at the workplace, if my movies don't show that the workplace is inclusive, why would I see reality as inclusive?
How much of your world was encompassing disability before you met Anita?
I'm very close to it, and of course, I think most people with such a large minority have connections to the disability world, and of course, a close family and the world that I've worked in always has a strong connection to the disability community. But I don't even think that I needed that. I think every person out there, whether you have a connection to disability or not, should realize that this is a population that is underserved and
hugely,
needs to be and that needs to change.
Well, one of my lines mantras is that we're all disabled, obvious or not. I mean, we all have a disability. We're all going to get more disabled as we age.
Absolutely.
You know, it's kind of what we do with it in life that defines us. And certainly we have to do more for people to give them possibilities and options. So talk to me about now the real ability spelled, again, R-E-E-L, abilities. And I love the double entendre there because real as in reel-to-reel machine, as in movie projectors, et cetera, and it's a good imagery for people. It's under the JCC umbrella. Tell us about that, please.
So JCC Manhattan is a community center on the Upper West Side, and we have a large
Jewish community center?
A Jewish community center, inclusive, of course, and has a large disability program, Center for Special Needs. And that is a big part of who we are, and we have a large arts program and film program. So it's really the coming together of these two great programs and presenting that. But we present it all in partnership. It's in, as I mentioned, over 40 locations throughout the city. So all of these locations run their own show. They select from within our selections. We got this year, by the way, over 1,000 submissions of films,
wow,
which is record-breaking.
Incredible.
For us.
Out of the 1,000, how many will be shown?
And only 33 get shown.
Wow.
So they're all great. Many great films actually could not make the final cut because we just didn't have more room for them.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not
if you
about...
did have, if it wasn't a space issue, how many do you think you could have possibly...
We had a short list of way over 50
okay,
very high-quality films. And then our partners actually help select what will be the final group. And we only have so many nights and a finite amount
sure,
of screening opportunities. So we try to roll some over, but there's always new ones coming in. So there's a lot of competition for these slots now, which
how
is
much,
great.
Oh, it's fantastic. How much media exposure does Real Abilities get?
Definitely not enough. Far from it. Luckily enough, we have the mayor's office who helps us get into the taxi cabs. I don't know if anybody has
mayor's
seen
those office
ads.
For people with disabilities.
Mayor's office for people with disabilities and for media and entertainment. Mm-hmm. Both partner with us, and they get us 30-second spots in the taxis.
Great captive
and
audience.
That is great exposure. But surprisingly, I'd say the New York Times has included us in different ways, but it's never written a feature about us, does not include us like they would include most festivals of our size and of our importance.
Time Out New York?
Time Out New York, you know, they're a free magazine now. They're not covering like they used to.
So we need a De Niro, someone of that caliber, to take Tribeca to where it is today.
We can't announce anything yet, but we are hoping to have somebody for opening night as a special surprise guest,
okay,
and hopefully in the next couple of days that will be approved for announcement.
So is this potential person someone who could be a long-term companion and or spokesperson, presenter, and or grower of the Real Abilities Film Festival?
I hope so, and this person really represents everything we stand for, both from the disability side and from the social activism side and from the film
Can
side.
Can you just tell me their gender?
It's a male.
Male. Oh, I was thinking, you know who I was thinking? Marla Maples. Is it Marla Maples, a hearing impaired woman?
Marley Matlin.
Okay, Marley that's who Matlin. I was thinking right away.
Marley has actually participated in our Cincinnati Film Festival.
Okay, good,
and
good.
Was a special guest there.
All right, the wheels are turning. Who could be? Okay, we won't belabor the point. So let's get on. Before we actually get on to some of the movies, because we won't have enough time in the hour to talk about the incredible movies, but just talk about, I mean, just like any other film festival, like Tribeca, Sundance, Cannes, Toronto, do you have the different categories, features, shorts, etc.?
We have it all. We have features, a lot of short films, documentaries. We actually have some animation this year, which is really nice. I'll say, though, that the big difference between us and those film festivals is that, first of all, we're in more locations than them. I don't know about Toronto, which is pretty big, but I could speak for Tribeca. I can't imagine that they're in over 40 locations throughout the city.
No.
And we are also more accessible than all of those film festivals. For sure, we're the only festival in New York that has all of our films with open captions, audio description for most of our films. Our conversations, which we require after every film, have CART and ASL interpretation. So we really try to make these festivals for everyone.
So there's an immense amount of planning and technology involved.
Absolutely. And it's funny, we're called Reel Abilities when you think about old film reels, and that's something that we don't see anymore.
Well, actually, I wanted to ask you this, and I figured, oh, we wouldn't have time, but since you opened the door, Isaac, how are movies delivered? What platform now?
So now it's all digital. It's on a hard drive.
It is.
We get a hard drive. So we'll maybe change our name to Hard Drive Abilities. But
that may have a different double entendre to it.
Yeah, I might want to stay away from that. Yeah,
exactly.
One.
Now, is that for major theaters as well? Everything's on hard drive?
Everything's on hard drive. Wow. Major theaters use a format called DCP, which is like an FBI kind of rated format that no one can actually break the code, but it's actually, I believe, already been broken. And yeah, that's it. Rarely do you ever get to see actual celluloid. It's all digital. And that's great for a film festival, because today we could actually hand our location partners a hard drive with the full film festival on a hard drive.
Wow, that's incredible. The size of what? A typical backup storage device drive?
One terabyte. You can fit it in your pocket.
Wow.
Festival in your pocket. That's how
mind-boggling.
Distribute it.
So moving on to the movie aspect, A Grand Pursuit is one of the first movies I was reading about a couple months ago. The first leg amputee to attempt climbing the Grand Teton Mountains without using a prosthetic leg.
We get a few of these films every year of people with a certain disability attempting to climb a mountain. It sounds almost like a cliche, like watch this person with a disability climb the mountain. And
it's
actually literal.
It's amazing.
And for me, it's whether it's a good – I don't care if it's a cliche or not. It's whether it's a good movie or not.
Yeah.
And this is just a great movie that really tells a courageous story, whether he had both legs or none. This is just a movie of somebody actually facing their fears, facing something that could be – that people probably said is impossible – and attempting to overcome. Mm. I won't ruin the ending.
And a lot of times I give talks and I talk about a triathlon story where I get to the water's edge because I'm visually impaired, and I realize moments before the gun goes off that I can't see the swim course. So it's a 20-minute story. It's compelling. It's riveting, et cetera. But at the end, I basically say everyone has triathlons in life. They just come in different forms, and everyone has mountains to climb in life. You know, it's obviously metaphoric, but the fact is that, you know, we all have – fears in life. And so how we get across these, how we knock the walls down, whether it's via in film, whether it's on a therapist couch, whatever. But this is great. I love it. And this is, for example, there's a few movies that you have about Marines or veterans returning that are wounded, and Birthday is a great example of that.
That was something that actually – a topic that we actually sought out and actually went after, because it's such an important topic and so relevant and so much a part of American society and a big part of the disability world today. It's part of the discussion. And we were actually having trouble finding the film on the topic. And at the last moment, Birthday came in, and it's a fantastic, beautifully made film. I actually don't even know how they made it and how they covered it, because you really see it's done as a fiction piece. But obviously with a person who's been through this as their real story, and you see the full rehabilitation process, and beautifully done. There's a love story in there too. And we're presenting that as part of our Friday night relationship program, which is a series of films that all have to do with relationships.
And
real relationships, R-E-E-L-O-E.
I love it. Of course, you got to play on it. I keep it
going.
Play
with the brand.
Tell me about A Blind Hero.
Blind Hero is another one that touches roughly. It's not really about the character's blindness is related to his service in the military, but I wouldn't say that it really represents what's going on today in the military. This one is just a beautiful little story about a blind man and his relationship with a young girl who's trying to take him around to a market. She's not speaking, and we discovered at the end of the film, not to give give away too much because it's really not about that, that this girl is deaf. And they develop this relationship. He's a little tough, and she actually manages to get to him and open him up a little bit. And he's they develop a relationship throughout the film. It's really a sweet story. One of the other nice things, we have a collection of shorts this year for the first time that are family-friendly. And we look for those because we want to bring in, once again, everybody, and especially young people who probably don't know as much about the disability community and are not coming to film festivals. So
is that some of the animation ones you alluded
to? So some of the animation ones will be included in that, and other wonderful films that are family-friendly. We're showing them for free on the Saturday of the festival. That's March 12th.
Yeah.
And in the afternoon, and it's going to be at the JCC, and we'll have there some speakers after the films too to kind of bring it all home. We're also showing it to schools and school groups that will be coming in throughout the week because we have the theater reserved for the film festival. We figure during the day, what better groups to bring in than schools? So we make it free for schools to contact us and to set up a screening for their classes and however else we can help them and bring in our filmmakers to for them to see these films.
And of course, JCC, we mentioned before, the Jewish Community Center, is the parent umbrella corporation, not corporation, but organization. What about sponsors? Who's helping making this all happen besides the JCC?
So, of course, we have a lot of individual donors who have come on board and some grants. Actually, this year, we have the National Endowment for the Arts has gotten behind us with their artwork grant, and that's extremely helpful. The Reeves Foundation is part of this for the first year, and that's really exciting and an honor, really, to have that name associated with our festival. And I think a good connection. Everyone who thinks about Reeves, of course.
Excuse me one second, Isaac. Was there a movie that was about Christopher in the last year or two?
Oh,
something along that
one?
Lines, or maybe it was a different film festival. I'm not sure, but something sounded familiar when you mentioned that.
Not didn't Reeves come Foundation. To us. Okay. We might have missed one. We do sometimes.
I doubt that,
but. But, yeah, that is definitely one that we would be proud to show, assuming it's a good movie.
Well, I guess that's another interesting point because, you know, when you want to become – or do you want to become the size of Tribeca and bigger? Of course you do, right?
We want to become
appropriately
as big as possible, of course. But I wait for the day, actually, where we don't need a Real Abilities Film Festival, where Tribeca is showing enough of these films
exactly.
that they've done their job and we would be redundant.
Why do you think – it's a great point you just brought up. Why do you think at Tribeca Film Festival or Cannes or whatever festival you want, Sundance, does not incorporate more films like this or any?
I think it's a tough topic for a lot of people. I'm actually constantly shocked. I live and work on the Upper West Side, and this is a progressive neighborhood in
Absolutely.
One of the most progressive cities in the world. And I'm shocked how people react to people with disabilities and how some people will make faces and really put up their hands and say, no, 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 this topic's not for me. And you would not say that about any other minority, I'm hoping. And it would not be right to say it about any other minority. And
unless it's the Oscars.
And I think people – and even people, by the way, from within the community say, listen, our lives, we are very full with our disability. We don't want to see movies about it. But the truth is these movies often – tell you a lot more than just disability. We don't just show movies because they present disabilities in a nice way. We show movies because they're good movies and hopefully will impact you and hopefully will give you a little bit more insight into the world of disability, no matter how familiar you are with it. And I think a lot of these festivals don't know how to approach the topic. So they see disability, they don't know if this is really something that they are allowed to touch, if this is something that they're going to draw an audience to. I think that's one of the hardest parts is although there are 50 million people with disabilities in America, they've yet to emerge as a market. This is that you know that if you're going to release a movie about disabilities and 50% of that market will show up, that is a great niche. This is what Netflix and every other major distributor today is looking for. They're
longing
looking for these
sure.
for these niches.
What about
disability
Eddie the Eagle?
Community. Sorry?
Eddie the Eagle that was just released.
Yeah.
Is that an example of a kind of on the cusp
I mean, it happens. It definitely happens. Yeah. And actually, a couple of years ago, my favorite examples was there was a European film that made it a little bit to America, but it was the highest grossing film in Europe of all time, I believe.
Overall.
Of a European film.
Okay.
Not of an American film. Mm-hmm. Those make much more money in Europe. It was the Intouchables, Untouchables. Do you remember this one? It was a man in a wheelchair and his caretaker. It was about their relationship.
Yes.
And it was a huge, huge hit in Europe. I would say for real abilities, it brought it up. It was not one of our perfect films, but we definitely did a special presentation of it and got behind it. And it was great to see these films coming to the mainstream. And we see it. By the way, we like to always say Finding Nemo. There's a great disability film that we've shown in the past and have done special presentations of. And maybe this summer when the sequel comes out, we'll have a new one to show.
Isaac Zablocki is my guest this morning. He's the director of Real Abilities, which is a film festival happening here in New York City. And in most states throughout the country, check out realabilities.org.
Absolutely. NewYork.realabilities.org will take you right to the New York site.
And it's happening March 10th through the 16th. Let's talk about some of the movies that are a little bit down our program director's alley. Beer and Margarita with a Straw.
Right. So Margarita with a Straw is actually our opening night film. This film did screen at the
Toronto. Sounds like an appropriate opening night movie.
A lot of people need to think about it and take a moment to say, wait a minute, Margarita with a Straw. And that's because it's a feature film. It's actually an Indian film, but it takes place here in New York. And it's about a woman based on a true story who comes to New York from a very traditional home and is suddenly opened up to the world of everything that New York has to offer on every level. And that means great margaritas, too. And she, of course, when she orders a margarita, she needs it with a straw because that's the only way for her to drink it. So as opening night, we're going to have our neighbors next door to the JCC, Playa Betty, is supplying us with margaritas. And we will be providing the straws. And that's going to be a very fun event. And it's a movie that pushes the envelope as far as the way the presentation of disability, their sexuality, you see a real person there as opposed to just a caricature of a person with a disability. And it's funny. She makes fun of herself. She uses her disability to kind of get her way. and that's really a rare presentation.
How many of the actors and or directors, et cetera, do take part in the festival?
Oh, we bring in almost every film. The short films only, that's there we get a little more selective. But for all the feature films, we bring in actors, directors, filmmakers, whoever's available, whoever's best connected. Sometimes it's somebody who inspired the story. That's like, for instance, Closing Night. We have a film that was inspired by a book and a true story of a man who was a stuntman in films on horses. And he was injured and is in a wheelchair and continues to ride horses and is a big advocate for horse therapy as well. And he's going to be coming in to represent the film.
Do you recall his name?
Not offhand. It's French.
Well, there you go. That's all you have to say. It's French. Now, we should make a very important distinction that not all the movies have people with disabilities in them. They could be by directors or writers who have disabilities and don't all target the disability realm. Correct?
That's true. From our selections this year, it seems that most actually include disability in some way. Mm. But we do accept films if the writer-director has a connection to the disability world, is themselves with a disability. And I already know for the cycle for next year that there are some of those that I've checked out that look really exciting. And we always love to see that there's just a film process, a film production that is so inclusive.
What are the guidelines, Isaac, in terms of being able to submit a film?
First of all, it has to be a good movie. We have open submissions, so we take films throughout the year. And we're already collection. We have a big list for next year already. and the film has to have a portrayal of disability or by a person with a disability. Okay. That takes a progressive approach. That's usually the approach we like to take. Our favorite kinds of films are actually films that are not about the disability at all,
great,
but rather just include disability mm-hmm. in some ways. And
it's a byproduct.
Inclusion. An example from the movie from this year's selections, there's a short film called Welcome to the Last Bookstore, and it's about a man who owns a bookstore. The man happens to be in a wheelchair. And that's right. Anybody, the person who owns a store can be in a wheelchair, and the person who's a doctor can be in a wheelchair or have a different disability. It doesn't really have to be about the disability. It could just show the normality of our world being inclusive towards people with disabilities.
I imagine, and I don't want to get down to minutiae here, but if someone doesn't have an obvious disability, do they have to provide anything to prove that they have a disability?
Absolutely not.
Good.
We'll take their word for it. Yeah. We don't check their ask for pictures or check their certification.
Are there awards given to?
We don't give awards. We feel that being selected for the festival is
recognition enough,
and kind of the award, because they really go on then to be in our 15 to 17 cities out there. So they get actually some distribution.
Absolutely.
Of course, we invite distributors to the film festival, and films have been picked out of our festival for full distribution, which is really great to see.
So for the March 10th date and through the 16th right here in New York City, and also New Jersey. When's New Jersey happening?
Sometime after us. They're going to be in Montclair, exactly.
Which is basically essentially right over across the river, 20 minutes away. What movie do you think is really going to take audiences by surprise?
Opening Night Margarita with a Straw is definitely one of the exciting selections, just because it's such a mainstream movie and yet plays in such a quirky new way that I think people are really going to be taken by it. I know our selection committee was taken by it. The other thing that I'm glad we emphasized a lot here are the short films. These short films, I think often people who are making films about the disability community don't have a huge budget. They're kind of, you know, mortgaging their house in order to make their movie. And that often means that they can't make a full feature film.
Sure.
They'll make a short film. And these short films are truly amazing. I mean, from the animated ones that are, I would say, on the level of Pixar to other
costly,
just like, you know, shorts. You mentioned Good Beer, which was made by some local filmmakers. They made it on a shoestring budget and really tells a nice love story and a nice relationship story all in one location.
With Hobbs being a nucleus? And barley.
yeah. They don't mention any of these specific beers that they're into there, but clearly I think both are beer fans. Both it's all about a date, and they're both fans of some microbreweries and enjoying a nice Brooklyn beer.
What about the price for entrance to these movies?
A lot of the screenings are free, and we make them as accessible as possible. And believe me, if anybody can't afford the movie ticket, we'll find a way to get them in. And some places do charge. The JCC Manhattan does have a charge. And I actually believe in making it accessible, but then movie tickets are relatively, in general, mm-hmm. accessible, and we're not charging the big IMAX prices. And I believe putting a price on these and a value to them, like any other film and any other film festival, is actually worthy of this festival and worthy of these films, and kind of adds to the credibility of it. So if anything, I push for more places to charge for films and not to make them free.
Have any movies been picked up and distributed in the past from your film festival?
Absolutely. Quite a few. I'd say every year at least one, sometimes multiple films have been picked up in different forms for distribution. And we're hoping for the same for this year. Distributors know our festival, so they check them out. And they're all trying to break through to that niche. So there's the art house crowd, and then there's the disability crowd.
Sure.
And that crowd
there's a huge untapped market. Gigantic.
It's really, I think the disability community needs to recognize that and empower themselves.
Mm, sure. Now, Isaac, a lot of people won't be able to possibly get there. They love the fact that, and they will go on your website, realabilities, reeabilities.org, and they can find you in New York City or wherever city you're located in. Will these films be available anywhere down the road?
So that's, of course, something that, to make it even more accessible, we are working on through our national office. There's a lot of demand for a streaming site. And there will be. There's no question. We already have a streaming site for one of our other film festivals, for our Israel Film Festival. We have a streaming site called IsraelFilmCenter.org, and we're about to launch an Apple TV app for that. So we have all the pieces in place. We know how to do it. We will get a streaming site out there. Also, a lot of our films are now 8 years old and or more, and have been kind of through the cycle of the festivals, and they're ready to go on streaming and to be there to the public, and we hope to get as many as possible.
How long off is this platform, do you think?
I would say in the next year.
Oh, that's close. Right around the corner.
Yeah.
So it's another great platform.
Funding is always the issue.
Yeah. How many of these filmmakers are or have backgrounds in education, have gone to school, et cetera? And is this probably a very ridiculous question, because a lot of people in film, doesn't matter whether they have a disability or not, sometimes are very dedicated to getting their point across.
It's interesting, actually, that first of all, there are more and more opportunities for filmmakers with disabilities. I'll mention three quick films. Bumblebees was a film that was made as part of a project called 48-Hour Film Project, and they had 48 hours to make a film about relating to the disability community, write it, shoot it, and edit it in 48 hours. It's a beautiful, charming film that does not leave everybody laughs and everybody cries in this movie. It is fantastic. I kind of use it almost for the commercial of the festival. And this was made by a young filmmaker who's a commercial director. She's out there. She actually can't make it to some of our screenings because she's working so much on other films. Another big name that we have is actually the director of a film called 2E, Twice Exceptional. He is an accomplished Hollywood writer. Him and his wife have his wife has written Mrs. Doubtfire, Overboard,
Wow,
Limitless. That's her. This couple is a
great
power
catalog.
Couple.
Sure.
And they have a child who is considered twice exceptional and has learning differences. And he's going to be coming to the festival. He's also a very well recognized writer. I believe his most recognizable film is Look Who's Talking, the third one of that series.
Yeah, after the
Look
second
who's
one,
now,
I saw.
Yeah. Right, Look Who's Talking sometime.
Look Who's Not Talking. And we should say Look Who's Signing. That would
look
be a great movie.
Signing.
Yeah, that'd be a great one. Isaac, thank you so much for coming in today. And Real Abilities is just a real gem. And I really hope it gets more exposure. I hope the New York Times picks up on it. Anyone who's listening today or listening via podcast, do me a favor and please tweet about this. Real Abilities, R-E-E-L, Abilities Film Festival. The website is realabilities.org, realabilities.org. And the New York website is?
newyork.realabilities.org.
Thank you so much for your time. And all the best to you, my friend.
Thank you very
much. Hope to see you next year as well. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much for listening to Insight. Special thanks, as always, to my producer and engineer at the controls, Jesse, and Jason Tobenfeld, programming extraordinaire. And also, coming up next, right around the corner, just after these great messages from other great shows here on the Progressive Radio Network, is your founder of the Progressive Radio Network, Gary Nolan. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a great day.